Welcome to this week's episode of the Fraudology Podcast, where we dive into the science and study of fraud from the perspective of online fraud fighters. I'm Carice Hendrick, and I am really looking forward to hearing what you think about part two of my conversation with Jordan Harris. At the time of our conversation, he was the Senior Director of Global Fraud for Ticketmaster. He is now Senior Director of Global Fraud for iHerb, and from what I hear, his first 2 weeks have been going well. Very, very busy, as all fraud jobs are. We never really get to ease into anything, but things are going well there. And one of the things that Jordan wanted to be sure to talk about on the podcast, and I welcomed the conversation, was around fraud vendors and just the vendor landscape as a whole, how merchants appreciate being approached, the type of relationship they want to have with their solution providers. But then also a lot of critiques about how they get from point A to point B, how a merchant, especially enterprise merchant, goes from being a prospect to signing a contract. There's a lot that goes on into that space, especially the first stage of the cycle, where from a solution provider perspective, you're prospecting. From the merchant's perspective, you're getting pitches. Because the vendor landscape within fraud technology has changed so much in the last 10 years, I don't know the statistics, but I certainly can picture the exhibition hall at the very first conference I went to, which I think was just a handful of companies, to now the last conference I went to 10 years later in 2019 was just full in a Vegas, you know, expo hall. So that's just one context that not every company exhibits in them, but it has created quite a competitive landscape. And in one hand, that's amazing because it encourages innovation and encourages relevancy. And that's really important in fraud technology. It's really important that we stay ahead of, if not keep up with, the fraudster technology, which is constantly advancing. But sometimes in that process, because it is so highly competitive, some companies and some salespeople can cross lines, and sometimes they don't realize that they're crossing a line. Sometimes they don't realize that there are a couple of things that Jordan definitely touches on in this interview that are kind of seen as deal breakers for merchants. And I've even heard a few conversations of, hey, heads up, these guys don't respect this boundary, or this company doesn't respect that boundary, or this happened, that happened. Within merchant conversations, merchants are like elephants. They have long memories. They also tell their friends things. And so my biggest piece of advice to solution providers would be to listen to the feedback of this one merchant. Know that while it is unique to one person, there are several elements of it that are shared by a majority of practitioners and people that work for enterprise merchants within the e-commerce space. And I hope that you learn a few things and maybe it can help inform your sales strategy for 2022. It's something that I've been helping a couple of clients on as well. I think especially with how crowded the space is, how busy people are, it's important to understand your prospects more than just people or brands that you want to sign for your company. With that, I am going to let you listen in on this conversation with Jordan. I think everyone will find it fascinating. Be sure to subscribe to Fraudology. There are more exciting interviews coming in the new year, as well as a couple more fraud news episodes. And I know from several of you that you're really enjoying those. Not only that I talk about what the news is, but then help apply it to your business and your fraud strategy. I'm enjoying putting those together as well. So with that, I will let you listen in on the second part of my conversation with Jordan. Be sure to listen to part one if you haven't already, and I will talk to you soon. Welcome to this week's episode of the Fraudology Podcast, and I am grateful to have Jordan Harris return for this week's episode. Hi, Jordan. Thanks
to be back
again for being here. Truthfully, there was maybe 5 minutes difference, but to everyone else, this is a whole other week for our conversation.
Future now.
We are talking in the future, but there was
there were a couple more topics that we wanted to discuss. And, you know, you and I being veterans in the industry, which I just think is funny, right? Because we're not that old.
It seems like I've been in this industry that long, but I guess we are at the, we're on the twilight side of this whole thing, right?
Hasn't been around that long. Yeah. I mean, gosh, when I started, there was only one fraud tool, and now there's a bazillion.
Yeah. New ones every day, I hear.
Yeah. You probably learn about them first. Or right around, you know, you and I both learn about them pretty soon when they hit the market, but, yeah. And so, you know, that has just that alone with the number and the volume of companies targeting this industry and the amount of money that's been pumped in through VCs and acquisitions and private equity companies, we've seen a lot, and it has impacted the way that salespeople reach out, because there's only so many e-commerce merchants. There's only so many, you know, target market. And so I definitely, you know, advise a few select vendors on this, because I feel like there's such a disconnect between what they think happens at a merchant and what a merchant needs, and just all those things to what is true, and not knowing their audience and not knowing how to sell and not sell to this industry. There's a lot that work in other industries, that a lot of tactics and methods of sales that don't necessarily work in this industry. And we will go into all of that, but I'd love to just hear from you. You know, this is a topic that comes up fairly often in merchant collaboration calls you and I are involved in, and that I host with other verticals as well. And it's around, you know, kind of this idea of vendors behaving badly, and often they don't know that they're behaving badly. Some of them have been told multiple times, and I, you know, I'll start hearing the same thing about a company 3, 4, 5, 7 times. And I'm like, okay, that's a pattern. And if people don't think that, you know, that happens, got news for you. They all talk. Or sometimes it's a case of a vendor, just, they don't know any better. Right. So, as someone that works for a large, well-known brand, I know that you've seen it all. So, but you've also enjoyed, you know, several steak dinners in the process.
Yes, so, I have.
You know, there's that balance, right? Where you obviously.
That's a good way to start, by the way.
With a steak dinner, yes.
Yeah, don't send an email. Send me a steak dinner.
Unfortunately, with COVID, it's a little bit harder. But, and that can sometimes be confusing to vendors too, is like, hey, I want your steak dinner, but I don't want you to call me every day. And so, you know, and so sometimes they're like, hey, well, you know, it's a tit for tat thing. So, anyway, I'm going to start with this loaded question, and that is, what advice do you have for, you know, fraud tech salespeople who reach out to e-commerce fraud leaders?
Yeah. And I mean, just for everybody that's listening to this knows, the more Michelin stars, the better. Call me. Just any of the salespeople that are listening. I like
that
two.
Is one
I really
good...
like two.
Yeah. Then the end. Yeah. I have received videos and pictures from a couple of them that you've attended.
That's right.
I'm
taking a tequila
bed,
shot and a two Michelin star. You've never lived until you've done that.
actually, yeah, I have once or twice, and I've even turned down a couple Michelin stars.
You're living then. Yeah.
Yeah, but I turn them down because I'm so, by the end of a conference, or like if I'm presenting or so, I can just be exhausted. And all I want is just takeout and my bed and the Real House.
I definitely have been a room service on day 5 before.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. Sometimes I'm room service on day 2. But anyway, yeah.
One of the things that I think, especially speaking about conferences, like that's where a lot of people get their warm leads, you know, they get any leads and then I get blown up immediately following, can put 15 minutes on your calendar, all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you, let's start with what doesn't work. Putting time on my calendar without asking. Under no circumstances will that ever work. I will never buy your product if you do that. So don't do that. But I think some of the stuff that works is getting a relationship and developing a relationship with me without actually selling. And that's an art.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, and like you see, like so many of these startups are hiring, you know, 50 salespeople to their 3 R&D people. And like, they're all these hungry salespeople that are fresh out of college, you know, not knocking them. And, you know, sales is a hard job to do.
Right.
And they have quotas, and that's how they get paid, and that's how they feed their families. I totally understand that. But you get these were like, I got 3 emails in one single day from the same person, and I never replied to any of them. And I got 3 in a day. Like, at that point, like, I'm just mad at you. And like, whatever your product is, I'm mad at it. It could be that solve that I've been hearing about every year somebody solved it. And that could be it. But because you sent me 3 emails in one single day, I'll never know it. I'll never use it. But
yeah.
The warm, with people that play like the long haul on those, that like we have the conversations, we see each other, we have the beer, you know, we have conversations.
They know the industry too.
Yes, important? And that's the thing is, like, if you're a startup fraud company and all of your salespeople are not, like, if you're not connected in any way to this industry, you're just a startup funded VC money. I don't think you're in it for the noble effort of fighting fraud. I think you're in it to, like, a South Park episode, money. Cash out and bro down, you know, like, that's the end of the day. And that's,
you would say that.
Of course. So I like people that have a pretty firm understanding, and especially, like, even outside of the fraud stuff, but on the payment side of the business, like, those companies have existed for decades. Yep. And the salespeople in that are people that are old school salespeople that know, in order to get an enterprise level client to sign up for their product, it doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. But these new startup people think that I can be pitched the product and sign and have it implemented by the end of the week.
And you're Ticketmaster, so you have a big budget. Like, that's what they always think. I have to go in and be like, not necessarily the case. And also, like, they need to know that you can prove yourself and you can, you know, be solvent to handle their, you know, I mean, I try to do my best, but I also won't work with every vendor. And so but the ones that I think have new technology and are interesting and that merchants will want to know, I completely help and have helped a couple companies be able to meet, you know, people like you. Yeah. But I don't do it in a sales way. I say, look, if it makes sense and if they have a problem and I think your product will solve it and I was going to recommend you anyways, sure, I'll help in that way. But I am not an outside salesperson. I'm not going to lose my merchant trust for that.
And I think that comes down to, and I know people are probably going to listen to this and be like, well, after I say this, and be like, well, you know, but I'll explain that. But you need to understand my business. And sending me a cold email does not show that you understand my business, which, right, first of all, it's like, well, how would they understand their business without having a conversation with you? At least, like, have an understanding of how my industry works. Mm. Like, not my fraud industry, but my vertical that I specifically am working within. So ticketing right now. And, like, having an idea of how ticketing works before you really try and solve a problem that may not even exist for me.
That's a good point. Like, and there's also different types of ticketing companies, right? Now, you guys are primary and secondary, but sometimes I'll hear merchants say, well, we, or vendors say, well, we work with blah, blah, blah ticketing company. I'm like, that has nothing to do with these other guys. And that I happens think that in others too, in other verticals. I'm just using that because I'm looking at
it. And I see so many of these vendors, especially when they love the slide that has all the company logo.
Yes.
That's like everybody's favorite slide. Yeah, especially when you're walking by a booth at, like, an MRC or something, like, there's just, like, a slide with a bunch of logos on it. And it's always take that with a grain of salt, because they probably don't, or it's less likely that they do the whole thing.
Yeah,
that they might have a single piece of the business, or, like, have done one thing in the past.
It could have been a legacy decision that they're actually moving off of. Like, I see it all the time where I see these logos and I know that that merchant is actually POCing a competitor of that.
I see that a lot.
Or there are also cases where merchants have it in their contract that they can't use, that their vendor can't use their logo. And they can't talk about it, and then they see those or hear about
it. Well, I get those. I get emails all the time too, like, that are like, "Come see what, you know, like, so and so and so and so and so and so is using." I won't say their names, because, like, usually I'd know, like, I too know that that's not what they're using. Like, they might use it for something, and I see the logo and their name, and then so what I'll do is I'll forward that email off to my friend at that company and say, "Hey, are these guys approved to say this or use this?" And it's every time, nope, and we don't even use that. Every single time. And those three that they'll list out aren't even in or related to my type of business.
Right.
So, like, I don't care what some e-commerce company in Europe is doing right now. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't. Right. Like, it's not my thing. And I'll tell you right now, every single ticketing person, like, in Europe right now, I know exactly what they use. I know what fraud software they're actually using right now.
Yep. Well, yeah. And that's the thing, right? I do hope that vendors walk away with, like, merchants talk to each other and they have really long memories. They're like elephants in this way. I mean, I'm not saying it's fair, But if you had one rogue sales rep 3 years ago and they did some stuff, you might have a brand issue within the merchant industry.
I'll follow that rep around too. If I had a bad experience with that rep, if that one rep was a snake and he's at your new company, like, you ain't talking today.
No, no. And that's, I mean, I think it's also important to say that you and most merchants do want to know what technology is out there, but sometimes the cold email isn't the right way to do it. And I agree with you. When I think about people who are really good at sales, it's the ones that are good at relationship building first. And within the enterprise level, merchants need to know they can trust you and what you say before they can ever trust you with their transactions and customer data. And that's something you're absolutely right that a lot of people assume, like, we have the answer and we need, you know, I worked with a startup a couple of years ago that was going about it the wrong way with enterprise merchants and acting like they had, you know, solved the problem. And in theory, they actually hadn't, they just had an idea of how to solve it. And they were pitching to really big brands and they were basically told to go take a hike. And then once I came on board and helped them and everything, and then I would reach out to those merchants and say, hey, they didn't know what they were doing before, but we've reworked this. Here's the value proposition. Are you interested in having a conversation? Oftentimes we would get in and sometimes we wouldn't, but like you have to, but I had to go in to their like headquarters and school them for probably 3 days on this is what merchants care about. This is what it looks like day to day. This is what, you know, works and doesn't work. And when they listened to me, they did well. There was a couple situations where they didn't. And I said, hey, do not email that merchant again. They said they're not interested. And what did they do? Yeah. They kept, and then I was on the hook with that. So, you know, it's a delicate balance, but it's something that I wish more companies understood that they need to take their time. And I think there's also a valid concern about, you know, when they go for the biggest brands, can they actually even handle
That's a great point. Like I'll never say the vendor's name because I still have respect for the vendors, like most of these vendors. But I had one that
funny
that
thing is I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah. But yes.
But they approached one time and they were like, you know, we'll fight your stuff and we'll cover all your chargebacks. And like I looked at how much VC money they had raised and it wasn't even as much as my chargebacks were. So we had to tell them, we're like, you understand that like if you did this, we would bankrupt you, like right now. So like wait a little while and then like they waited and they came back, you know, and we do some business with them right now. So it's happy, you know, but like you got to make sure like because everybody sees like a Ticketmaster or any sort of enterprise client like that that's large, especially as a new like just graduated last June salesperson. He's like, I'm going to go land this, you know, and they get the dollar signs in their eyes and they come swinging thinking that like you said, that
but they haven't done their homework for even an hour, right?
Like I have people put my name, they don't even have my name right in there. And like, or like they'll sometimes have the wrong company because they're using the same copy and paste template. Like, what are you doing? Like, what do you think that you're going to land a client this size without a relationship with me over one effing email? Like, get out of here. And like, I don't even know what you look like. I've never seen you in person, you know? Like, can I have a beer with you? Could we talk shop? Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like,
well, and that's
who am I
about
to be bound to for 3 years?
Right.
Like, who am I about to be bound to?
Right. Because these contracts are long. And, you know, contrary to popular belief, the bigger the brand, that doesn't mean the bigger the budget. And it doesn't mean that you can switch and change within a year. There might be a solution that's 10 times better than what you use, but you can't implement it right away or ever unless you prove how much money you'll save and over time and all that.
I was talking to another merchant probably about 2 weeks ago, just asking like how their program's going, what's going on, you know, just feeling out some stuff that I do, the diligence that I do being me. And like, they didn't care about how much they cost. They didn't care about their approval rates. They didn't care about anything. All they cared about was growing their company. And like, there are some people that are like that, but me, enterprise clients, like that, especially public companies, like every dollar has to be accounted for. And if I spend a dollar, they need to make sure that I'm making $2 back doing
at least.
So, So I can't just spend willy nilly, especially when like, you don't even have your pricing worked out yet, you know? And like, sorry guys, like just so like any vendor that's listening to this, the percentage base doesn't work for everybody. You need to have fixed fee models as well, because when I'm reselling somebody else's product, I have to give them all the money. So I can't cut a percentage of it off and give it to the, and take it away from them. Like I need to have a fixed fee that I can say, this is how much it costs to do this period. And I'm sorry, guys, but this is going to come out of your cut because it's what we're doing. But I can't be like, well, you know, sometimes it's 25%, sometimes it's 10%, you know, blah, 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 and just keep the money. I got to give it back to them. So, please.
No,
I'm getting loud. I'm getting,
you're getting passionate.
Passionate over here.
Well, you know, I think that's the thing, though. I mentioned earlier that this industry is very different and unique to other industries, especially in SaaS, in software as a service sales. And I think a big part of it is that we pay attention to the details. We notice when an email has been copied and pasted. We notice when all those things.
We do, because that's how we do our job. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. The other thing is we're really good at being trained at identifying social engineering tactics. Well, what do most sales books and courses teach? Forms of social engineering. You know, it's in our, a lot of us are analytical, we're detail oriented, we're noticing those things because we have to for our job. We can't turn that off. And sometimes I wish I could in my personal life or in, you know, everything else, I wish I could turn off that like very detailed, very like specific part of me, but it makes me good at this, right? And so I think that that's something that people need to realize too, is that you're dealing with people who can smell bullshit a mile away. I mean, that's just because we have to. And so the other thing is that when a vendor misrepresents their services, and either we ourselves or another, you know, merchant goes for that, that is also something that the merchant community can get very upset about. And I certainly have. I think I ranted on it a couple episodes ago about a merchant I worked with, I met with for a discovery call, and they were like, we thought we were getting, you know, X with this service. Yep. And I knew exactly who it was before they even told me, and they weren't. And now they're locked into a contract and they're being gaslit, being told, well, that, you know, we're not going to tell you it's proprietary. Well, math is not proprietary. It shouldn't be.
Yeah. That's funny. Like, I mean, there's a couple of vendors that stuck around a little longer than I actually had expected them to. That are like their offering is, there's a couple of them. There's just like one or two, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's like the overpromise under delivery, and you see like some of the people that contracts that did sign. Yeah, they're stuck in those contracts, but they're then calling and having to spin back up other products again. Mm-hmm. And some of them completely like machine learning. You know, everybody says they got machine learning. Okay, like, you know, telling a computer to add 1 + 1 is equals 2. Like, is machine learning, you know, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's a buzzword. We all hear it. Everybody's got it. Great.
How are you applying it? How is it?
Like, where are you putting it? Where are you training the model? Is it black? Yeah, it's black box. What are the tags? Can I change the tags? Like, what is?
Is it custom? Is it? And there's so many different things. Machine learning is not machine learning. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, and like, there's one that like they're like, we use machine learning to make the decision, and like, in reality, their machine learning is like a bunch of people offshore. No, it's a bunch of people offshore making the decisions, like straight up, like doing it for them. And like, it's amazing. It's amazing. And that company has raised like a lot of money.
Yep. And that's the thing, right? There are some companies who have chosen to invest more in sales than their product and development. And I know there's a merchant that we both know who, and I think you've done this too. We've talked about it before. I think all of us, where sometimes they'll look and see on LinkedIn, you can see how many people are on LinkedIn from the company, and then you can see the titles, right? And sometimes you can see a graph, and if over 50% is sales and then only maybe 20% is engineering.
It's all pump and dump then.
Right. And some of these are legacy products that worked great 10 years ago, but the company has made a decision not to reinvest. But instead of saying that they have made the decision not to reinvest, instead they're adopting buzzwords. And that causes a lot of distrust in the industry and causes a lot of issues. And it's really hard when, you know, we are working with other merchants, and especially the newer ones who haven't really worked with other people in the industry. And they're like, well, we use so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, I know what your problems are going to be already. And I wish that wasn't the case. I wish that wasn't the case. But, you know, I think that, so we've obviously talked a lot about what not to do. I do want to touch on one more thing that is like, do not, it's the red button, and it's not just for you. This is for almost every merchant I know. What is the one thing that is like, if somebody does this, you will never work with them ever.
Yes.
Whether they have the most amazing product ever.
So the put time on my calendar is a pretty bad one, but the ultimate, the one that you should never do under any circumstances, any vendor listening to this, is if I tell you no, and I'm the head of my department, go around me to somebody else to try and get a different answer. Mm-hmm. That is the worst of the worst. What, like, if I run my department and I tell you, no, I'm not going to buy your product, or I'm good right now. You know, I don't say no, I'm not like that rude about it. I try to say no in a nice sense, but you don't listen to me. And then you go around and go to like the CFO and you try to go that way. Obviously I would be the daily driver. So I would have to make that decision again. So then I find out the CFO punts something down to me again and says, hey, what do you think about this? And I have to be like, I just told them, no, we're not interested right now. That makes my blood boil. And you will be blacklisted forever and ever and ever from any sort of business that I ever go to. Like, just
and
because
chances are you'll tell other merchants, and other merchants will tell. I mean, it's really,
I will sit at the cocktail hour and I will soapbox that story everywhere.
Yep.
And then, and it's,
and you are not
times.
The only one. There are a few merchants that are actually there are several that are the same way. This is the number one thing. And there are a couple companies who actually have good products, but who have had this as their business model or their sales strategy more than one time, either at the beginning or at the end, because I also know some at the end of the sales cycle, right? So say that you're, you know, POCing something, you're doing a proof of concept and you're comparing to providers. And, you know, one of the vendors just calls up your boss and says, hey, I heard that we're going forward, so let's get those procurement papers done. I've heard
try
that
and
as
sneak
well.
That in. Yeah. Like, what's good? Like, what do you, who really thinks that, like, the CFO isn't going to be driving the product. Like, I'm going to be using it every day. So why would I use something that I just said no to? And this, it comes back to like in life, everybody, in life, no means no. It really does. No means no. And don't try and force a yes. And if you apply that concept across all areas of your life, you'll not, first of all, stay out of jail, which is fantastic, but leave a much better and fulfilled life knowing that, hey, they said no, I moved on.
Is this turning into a personal development podcast episode, Jordan?
maybe, but you know me. Like I'm with you.
I'm 100% with you. And I think that that's, you know, that was something I really wanted to get across, because it's one thing if I say it, I think it has 100 times more value than, you know, when a merchant says it, especially a merchant with a big brand behind them. I think that, you know, just really quickly, I'd love to hear just, you know, one or two examples of things that the vendors can do. I think, you know, you definitely said that, you know, playing the long game, it's a marathon, not a sprint, doing your research, learning a little bit, or asking questions, right? Now, I will say that the approach of, hey, I just want to pick your brain, or hey, I just want to learn from you. Like,
no, I don't consult for free. I don't consult with anybody for free. Like, well, whether that be merchants or whether that be vendors.
Well, and I need to be doing more of that as well. Mostly for merchants. I often will, but that's also,
you've been very helpful to me multiple times without asking me to pick my payment method, I will say.
You and I have joked, if you want to pick my brain, you need to pick your payment method. But well, it's tit for tat, right? I mean, I get a lot of great information from you guys too. And I don't believe in holding my information hostage. So sometimes if there's, you know, something I can help with quickly, or it's not going to take me, you know, a lot of project work, I'm just going to tell you the answer. But I do think that, you know, there are definitely, you can learn without putting pressure or burden on a merchant. I think there's a million things that I'm going to do. I do kind of have a training course that I've done for some individual vendors, but I've definitely have it on my roadmap to do something, bringing some of you guys in, you know, who are able to be more vocal about this, to kind of do like almost a course on how to sell.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. I've got like lists and I've got, you know, like, as I've got some, but not like for a general audience, but,
I will say to finish up that particular question is like, The long con, can't say that. The long haul is definitely an underrated tactic. Like, I worked on a deal at a previous company, and it took 3 years for that deal to actually come through.
Yep.
And it came through, and like now that company's been using that product longer than when I was there. So it paid off in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But you be prepared, especially at large organizations with a lot of moving parts, to spend multiple years on the sales cycle. That's just how it's going to be. I'm sorry, but don't put all your eggs in that one enterprise basket, because there's so much red tape that has to get signed off. And then once the red tape is signed off, there's a lot more red tape to get that thing implemented. So you're just going to have to wait. So you can hit that low hanging fruit all day long with your 50 salespeople. But for the whales out here, you're just going to have to wait. You're going to have to just fish around a little longer.
110%. And I couldn't agree with that more. I think the other thing is knowing that the person leading the fraud, you know, the fraud team, the one that has the decision, this is not responding to vendors and knowing what's in the market isn't even 5% of your job. I think that's something that's underrated.
Yeah, people sit there and vendors,
like, they don't reply to my email, or they didn't reply to my email in a day. So
like, I have a job to do. LinkedIn. I have an actual job to do.
And you're not the only salesperson reaching out to that merchant even in this hour.
Yeah. Right? And they're like, well, why didn't they reply? Well, like, I got 50 emails today. I got a job to do. That's that's it, on my shit list. That's probably at the top. And unfortunately, I don't work that to-do list today.
Right. Well, yeah. And I just think some understanding for the other side. I did a episode long ago on the online fraudcast called Merchants Are From Mars and Vendors Are From Venus. And it was really popular. But the funny thing was, there'd be sales reps that would be like, oh man, I learned so much. And then I'd hear down the road that like they were at a fed, like they did something that I had said, absolutely don't do. Do you not
like Holly listen? And I, Holly and I did that CNP session with you, and then people in the comments were like, thank you so much for really getting out there. By the way, do you have 15 minutes to listen to my pitch? I'm like, dude, you're in the comments on the podcast. Like, let's do this.
Right, right. That was funny. Both of you were like, you know, here I was talking about what not to do, and they did that thing after saying like, hey, I saw you in your session. And I think sometimes they just, you know, because speakers are publicized, sometimes people will do that when they haven't even attended the event, and they'll just reference it because they know that's like a way that they can, you know, try to build rapport. But it was very funny that you both were like, did they attend the session?
They were just there. They just saw our company names and they just went all in.
That's definitely it. So we are coming to a close. Obviously, you and I could talk about this for so long.
All day.
Yes, we could. But actually, you have made some big news. I was privy to the news a while ago, but you've made it public on LinkedIn. But you're now leaving Ticketmaster and moving to physical goods retailer. I know this was a difficult decision.
It's very hard.
Oh my gosh.
I love my job. I love Ticketmaster. I do. I love my team. Like, well, it's just very, very hard.
I sometimes joke that I feel like I'm the therapist for fraud managers. And I think like in this case, I feel like a little bit with you only because, you know, you were trying to make a really big decision. And there's been a lot of people in this industry that have had to make this kind of decision recently. And that's going to be a future podcast episode, because I think there's a lot there that needs to be talked about with the great reshuffle, as they say in this industry. But that is a topic for another day. What are you looking for? I want you to share, you know, who you're going to be working for and what you're looking forward to in your new role and what you're going to be focusing on in the first few months.
Yeah. So I am leaving Ticketmaster and I'm going to a physical goods retailer called iHerb. And they sell like vitamins online, any sort of wellness and health products. And I'm going to be, they already have a very robust system in place. So I'm going to spend a lot of time just learning, especially the first couple of months. I'm not the person to come in like Miley Cyrus, wrecking ball, and tear everything out and change it all. I like to work a little slower.
Yeah, music reference. Know, that's actually, yeah, take a mask
actually
there,
my ringtone on my phone, and I'm getting pretty
of course
tired.
Of it is.
But, you know, I like to sit and learn. And at Ticketmaster, I tried to do that approach. Obviously, we had some deadlines that needed to be met, so I had to change some things. But for the most part, like, I think people that come into an organization and try and rip everything out without understanding the why usually set themselves up for failure. And I actually have been reading this book, The First 90 Days, that my actually current HR suggested that I read. Was like, we have that kind of relationship at Ticketmaster where we all are very open with each other on what we're doing and what we're up to. But this is actually, as I've been reading, it is a philosophy that I've done for several years and several job changes, is you need to learn what and why. So what are they currently doing and why are they currently doing it? Because your last job specifically might not carry over to this? Like, so what works in digital goods and ticketing definitely is not going to work exactly the same in shipped goods. And I've done shipped goods before, so I have some experience there.
Right. You've done supplements as well, sort of. So you know that space and what you'll see. I would say too, that like sometimes people will go just to another competitor. So same vertical and things are completely different. Systems, company culture,
I do have an idea of what they're using. And I know I have an idea of where they want to go. And obviously because I'm not working for them just yet, I can't, I don't have the clearest picture. So I'd like to get that clear picture and come up with a long-term. I know they're looking for a longer term strategy, and what they have is working. Like it's great. And what I know about it is it's pretty good. So like there might not be any real changes that would ever need to be made, which I think we talk about change, but I'm just going to program manage for them, you know, and they already have a very robust manager there that we all probably know in the industry. He's been there for a while. And I don't want to step on any toes of what he's built or anything, you know. Right. I want to make sure that like I'm just there to offer support. And that comes back to like another management philosophy that I have, like that servant leadership, where I'm there to enable my people for what they need, and just offer suggestions, remove blockers and things like that. But I'm really there to serve them as their leader. And it's served me pretty well. So I'm pretty happy to see what we're gonna be able to build there. Like I built a really good system with really good people at Ticketmaster that I'm very proud of. And I am looking forward to being able to build something and do it again.
There's something about, you know, building or helping to improve or help a company scale to their next level that is just really fun and fulfilling. 100%.
It's like adult Legos.
It really is problem solving in that way. That's one thing I love doing in my consultancy too, is, you know, working on strategy and what pieces go together and what piece you need and what piece you don't need, and, you know, how to put that all together. It can be fun for those of us who, yeah, adult Legos. It's a good way to put it. Well, I still want to ask you back at some point to share one of your favorite fraud stories, but
those are long.
We both have to run to other meetings, unfortunately, but I really appreciate your time, and especially spending, you know, some of your last little bit of time at Ticketmaster with myself as well as the Fraudology audience. I know everyone really appreciates when they can hear from merchants that are doing the work on the front lines, and I appreciate your passion for collaboration and sharing information. I know we both enjoy speaking at conferences and helping others. And, you know, while I know you like the stage, you also do help merchants behind the scenes too. And I know they appreciate it too.
And I enjoy it. Like, I think we're all in this together. I always say it. We really are. And despite my aggression towards salespeople that are blowing me up all the time, I am approachable and I'm always here to help people, offer advice as much as I can. Feel free to pick that payment method if you want. But no, I kept the conferences, like especially at cocktail hours, I'm always happy to be in the trenches and share those battle stories with everybody. I think we all learn a lot from that. Collaboration is the key.
100%, 110%. You know, I drank that Kool-Aid a long time ago, but I really appreciate it. I will put your link, a copy or a link to your LinkedIn in the show notes. Yeah, for people, so that you can hear from more salespeople. But
feel free to say nice things about me, everybody. I do like my ego stroke too.
This is true. But that is one thing I think I know I appreciate and others appreciate, is that you also, you know, well, there's a phrase that I used to love to say about myself and I still do, you know, if you learn to laugh at yourself, you never run out of things to laugh at. You don't take yourself so seriously. And I appreciate that. And I know a lot of other people do too, especially at the cocktail hours, but those are all kinds of stories, or the more after hours are the stories there, we'll leave those there.
I've lost some stories.
Well, if you don't have them, I know people that do.
Yes, so. That's right.
That's part of it too. Those of us that know each other well, we can't make, you know, too big of enemies of each other, because we know, you know, we know the stories.
That's right.
But anyway, on that note, Jordan, thank you so much. And I appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing what your next chapter brings.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks again. Appreciate it.